Good afternoon. It is... we are here on a Monday afternoon. It is 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It is Monday, January the 11th, 2016. Scott Spears along with you and having a good time as always here on WWGH Radio. Terry Tackett in studio with me today. Terry, how is life in the fast lane on this Monday afternoon?
It is cold.
It is cold. The temperature finally came and took a change for the worst. Well, some people have waited for this. They wanted the cold weather.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting.
We didn't get it for Christmas or New Year's, but we got it for...
we got it for this holiday.
Yeah.
Or this time of the year. I guess it's not even a holiday, is it? David Bowie, though, dies today.
David Bowie,
one of the legends of rock and roll, dies at age 69.
I still remember the song that inspired Vanilla Ice's Ice Ice Baby, Under Pressure.
Is that what did it?
David Bowie, yeah.
My goodness.
I think it was him and Mick Jagger.
Now, interestingly enough, we have... we're supposed to have a guest this hour. You know, I'm never going to mention it because every time I mention that we have a guest, they don't come, which kind of annoys me. Okay, I'm even going to give you his number and see if you can get him on the line here. I wish I had a pen, and I wish I had a piece of paper. Here we go.
Okay.
But we're going to work on it here. WWGH Radio stands for hold meetings right up until the time before you're supposed to go on the air.
Yeah.
And then...
that was a fiasco.
Yeah. That was interesting. Okay. He said between 12 and 12:15, and we're calling it 12:14. So get him on the line there, and we will get him up on the air. Remember, the Faye Bank Charlie Evers Show is now on, can you believe this? It's on 3 days a week, every Wednesday and Thursday morning from 10 a.m. until 12 noon, and every Friday from 1:10 p.m. till 3 p.m. A Marion Radio Institution who gives away gifts like they're going out of style. We enjoy that a lot. Charlie Evers now right here on WWGH Radio every Wednesday and Thursday, 10 a.m. until 12 noon. Do we have the guest? Okay, we're going to get him here in just 1 second, and this is going to be a lot of fun. Trust me, this will be an enjoyable hour for you, the listening audience, to talk to this gentleman. Okay, here we go, I think. Okay, are we moving in the right direction here? Do we have our guests today? All right. We are going to transfer. All right. As we continue here on WWGH Radio, we have got a guest today. I think he appeared on my show once before many years ago, and we are so glad to have him back today because, to me, he is the man who has been playing the soundtrack of your life for a lot of years, dating back, I believe, to the 1950s, if you can believe that. One of the interesting facts about this gentleman is his theme song was done by the Four Seasons. Who has their theme song done by the Four Seasons? Only this gentleman, and we're going to hear a little bit of it here. Let's hear it. Go, go, Cousin Brucey.
Go, go. With Cousin Brucey.
Go, 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 go.
Can't you hear that groovy beat now, baby?
Baby.
Don't you wanna tap your feet now, baby?
Come on, let's go, go, go. What a groovy show. Come on and go, go.
With Cousin Brucey.
Folks, it's with great pride and privilege that I announce the legendary Radio Broadcasting Hall of Famer, one of a kind, this gentleman. Right there it was, Cousin Brucey Morrow. Cousin Brucey, how are you?
Well, good morning to you. You know, every time I hear that theme, it's very rare that I'm not on the air and playing it for my own show. But every time I hear it on a broadcast, like yours, I get very excited. It gives me a good chill. I love it.
It's a wonderful song, and I want to ask you where that came from and how that came about. But Cousin Brucey, we have a little like chirp in the line here. We're not hearing you exactly correct.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm on my telephone, so you want to see if you can want to call back?
Yeah.
Reconnect?
Let me try to reconnect here, and we'll do that just momentarily. We're going to take a quick break here on WWGH Radio. Come back with the legend himself, Cousin Brucey. Don't you dare go anywhere. Stay tuned. This is going to be a big, big show. Cousin Morrow, can you believe it? That is a one-of-a-kind guy. Did you hear the chirp in the line when you had him on the first time? You did. Well, make sure there's no chirp this time. Maybe we just had a bad connection. It did get cold outside, so I guess maybe that's what's going on here. But we're going to get Cousin Brucey back on the line here just momentarily. Make sure there's no chirp in the line. Had a little hiccup there. A lot of great things coming up here on WWGH Radio this week, one of which will be tomorrow, January the 12th at 12:10 p.m. We're going to be joined by the son of former Mayor Hap Dollar. We're going to be joined by Hap Dollar Jr. That'll be Tuesday, January the 12th at 12:10 p.m., Hap Dollar Jr. live in studio to talk about his life and times in Marion, and certainly the fact that his father was Mayor of Marion for so many years, and that's a mayor you don't hear it's one of those great names from the past, much like Cousin Brucey Morrow. So we're going to get this fixed here. All right. I think we've, okay, much better this time? All right. I think we've checked with Mission Control, and hopefully all rockets are firing now. Cousin Brucey Morrow, how do you sound?
All right, now do we have a better connection?
You know, I just called the phone company and sent in the bill, and now we sound good.
Good, because you know I just sent in my bill too, so two of us paid, and they probably screwed both of us.
You know, those surcharges, I don't know where they come from.
You're right. Well, as I was saying before, every time I hear that theme, and I'm not doing my own shows, I get very excited. It still has, what a lovely gift that was from the Four Seasons.
How did that come about?
I'll tell you honestly, Scott, Cousin Scott, I don't even know, but here's what happened. One day I got a call from Frankie Valli and Bob Gordio of the Four Seasons, and they said, can we come up? We have a surprise for you, literally. So the guys came up, I think all of them came up, on the air that day, and they gave me a recording tape on a 5-inch reel. I don't know how many people still remember recording tape. The kids don't, but you know, it's a little quarter-inch diameter plastic on a reel, and they played this thing to me. We played it right on the air without me even hearing it, and I freaked out. It was great. So they did a special tribute to me, and it was a gift. In fact, that song that we just heard on your show, it's in their greatest hits album. They have a double album, and they included that song in the album because it got so popular.
You know, it just gets you going. It's a happy song, and boy, I wish more people in broadcasting still use theme songs like that.
I know, I wish so too. Well, you know, it was a 60s phenomenon. It was a way of identification, but you know what happened? Owning radio stations and programming them, a lot of programmers started over-jingleizing, if I may make up a word, over-themeizing, and it got too annoying, because it got so annoying sometimes the jingles were longer or as long as a recording, and it got a little too much, so people had to start, programmers had to start using it, you know, with a little bit of taste. Go easy, you can't let it take over the whole show, but I wish people would use more of that. Of my shows, I still use jingles. You know, we have this my friend down in Dallas, Texas, his name is, I think it's Jam Jingles, and he, you know, is like the king of that stuff, and he's very good, Jingles, and I love him.
Yeah, there really is something, you know, you hear that music, you know who's coming on, and it really becomes part of the soundtrack of the radio listener's lives.
Well, it's part of my clothing, and it's part of the audience's clothing. It's fun, like you said. It IDs you, it gives you a good feeling, and it sets the feeling of what you want to do. It's good.
Absolutely. Bruce, one thing because I really want to go back here and learn about Cousin Brucey. Where did you grow up, and what was your childhood like?
Well, I never grew up. No, I grew up in Brooklyn. I'm a Brooklyn kid. I always tell people that I was born down in Lubbock, Texas. I've adopted Lubbock, Texas because of Buddy Holly. And I love Lubbock, Texas. And I always say to people, someday I'm going to have my hometown parade. I was actually born in Brooklyn, New York. And that's where I grew up. And I think that's where my taste in music really developed, the New York sound. I think it's I always say to people, what is it about New York with the music? Well, I think it's the water and the air. And you mix that together, you get an explosion. And that's where I grew up, and that's how it happened. My mentors were people like Alan Freed. Now, let's see how good you are in your history. Tell me about Alan Freed, Scott, or you want me to teach you a little?
You might have to teach me. Now, I know the name.
But he came out of Cleveland.
Well, absolutely, and he was one of the pioneers in the rock and roll
was,
movement.
Well, I'd say he was the father of contemporary radio. You know, he used to get on. He was really the very first DJ, and I hate to use the word DJ because that sounds like somebody who's, spinning records in a hip-hop. But he was one of the original personalities that really sounded like the music. He had that cacophony. He had that beat in his voice, and he matched his patter to the platter. He talked like the records were playing. And he was the very first one. He came out of Cleveland. And his original name, by the way, Scott, was called Moondog, if anybody wants to look that up, because there's a good piece of radio history. Moondog used to have the Moondog balls out there, the big record hops. And then eventually he came to New York City, and that's when his real legend started. And he was really one of the daddies of rock and roll top 40 records and radio.
You know, Brucey, you talk about the people who influenced you and who you idolized, but what was it just about the broadcasting industry when you were growing up that appealed to you? Did you ever want to be anything else?
Well, yeah, I did. I wanted to be I always wanted to become a doctor. I always wanted to study medicine. And you know, Scott, I always say it's not too late. I might register next semester for medical school. I don't know about that, but it's always been my dream. I always wanted to be become a doctor. But most of my life, in fact, started really in my, I guess, elementary school. So you're talking about, 10, 11 years old. I always loved the stage. Well, that's not true. I'm fibbing. I grew up, I was a very shy kid, believe it or not. I didn't want to talk to anybody. I was very shy. In class, I was always so afraid the teacher was going to call me. I had to stand up. Until one day, Scott, my English teacher at PS 206 decided that I had some kind of hidden talent that had to be let loose. So she convinced me to take part in what they call a hygiene play, in front of the auditorium of the assembly. Now, hygiene play in those days, or instead of sex education, because in those days we couldn't use the word SEX, it was forbidden. So we had hygiene plays. So one year, on the year that Cousin Brucey stepped out, was discovered himself, actually, we had a dental hygiene play. And I won the part after an audition, this terrible audition, because it was I was so scared. I was a cavity. I became a tooth cavity. And they dressed me up as a tooth, Scott. And I went on the stage as a tooth, and I sang some kind of silly song. My mommy tells me, brush my teeth. I never want to brush my teeth. That kind of thing. So I was a cavity. And the audience responded to me, and I responded to the audience. And that was the very first time, and I can still feel that feeling, that I had this rapport and this connection to an audience. So that was really the time, the birth of the beginning of Cousin Brucey. Of course, the Cousin Brucey thing wasn't to be for many, many years. But that's how I discovered myself, and I came out. And then after that, the teacher, this Mrs. Freilicher, came over to me and said, I want you to try out for the Old City Radio Workshop. Now, Scott, in New York City, we have a nice thing. I guess, in Ohio, in certain cities, you must have that too, or I know wherever you are. Maybe you do in certain public schools, especially today. It was a radio station that was run by the Board of Education of the City of New York, and they used to take, quote, gifted students, I don't know how I got in there, and they audition them, and you go on an actual commercial-type radio station. You do educational programs and things that have ethical and moral messages, and you do mathematics, and you teach things. But they had also dramatic shows, and I became one of the leads performers in these dramatic shows. And that's really how I got my start. So I owe my career really to my English teacher, my teacher at PS206.
That's great to hear. Well, you know, you mentioned it there. Cousin Brucie didn't come about till years later. Where did that name Cousin Brucie come from?
Well, I was up, on WINS at that time. I was a producer. I was a producer, and what a producer does in those days, that it was a sort of a top 40 slash news radio station, and they used to put the records together. In those days, we used to use these things called records. Probably nobody knows what, it's probably not in their vocabulary, those little discs at about 5 or 7 inches with a hole in the middle that was black. We used to call them black shellac that had grooves in them. So I used to put all the records together for the DJs, the personalities, and I used to collect and put all the commercials in order for them. And that's how I started. One day, Scott, this is kind of interesting and kind of scary, there was a strike. There was a strike of the radio personalities in New York City. So all the radio people, on-air people, walked out of the station. So what do? The program director and management came over and said, guys, we're all going on the air. Now, they knew I had a radio, previous radio on-air experience, because when I graduated New York University, I went and I sent out my demo tapes, which we can talk about some other time if you want, because that's kind of a story, too. And I got a positive response from Bermuda, right? Bermuda, the nation, little island nation of Bermuda. And I accepted the job, because that's the one I wanted to go to a warm, reasonably warm climate, and I stayed there a little over a year. And that's where it started. And it was kind of an interesting experience because I was never really away from home in New York City. So that alone had a great, great mark on my life. And in my first book, I have a few books. And my first book, I forgot the actual title, Cousin Brucie's My Life in Rock and Roll Radio. That's what it was. I talk about that my experience on the little island nation of Bermuda. And that was really where I really learned about life. And about growing up. It was a good experience for me.
And that's where the Cousin Brucie name generated from?
Let's see. No. Then I came back. No, let me get that right now. I came back, and one night I was on WINS. I was on Wins Radio for a while, for about 2 years. And one night a little lady came into the studio with a guard. In those days, we used to let people up unannounced, and we weren't afraid of somebody commandeering the radio station or something like that. And she said to me, this little lady with twinkly eyes and blue silver hair, said to me, "Sir," and I knew she didn't know who I was. We were in Central Park, and we used to get a lot of people who were lost or didn't have or heard of something. She said, "Listen, do you believe we're all related?" This is exactly what happened, Scott. I said, "Yes, ma'am, I do. I do believe we're all related." Then she said to me, looking me straight in the eye, which captured me, she said, "Well, cousin," she called me cousin, because we're related, "can you lend me 50 cents? I'm broke. I can't get home." So this is what happened. Is that funny? And, you know, it shows you that fate plays a part, because we all need a shtick. I gave her the 50 cents. She wasn't interested in what I was playing, I knew that. And she said to me then, looking me in the eye again, "Thank you, cousin. Really appreciate it." And she left. Well, that night on the way home, I lived in Brooklyn, the great nation of Brooklyn. Notice what I said, not the borough, not the city, not the state. I said the country of Brooklyn, because that's how we all feel growing up in Brooklyn. I was in the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel, and in the middle of that tunnel, a bell went off and a light went on in my head. And I heard this little old lady saying, "Cousin, cousin, thank you." I said, "That's it. From now on, I'm Cousin Brucie." The next morning, I went into the program director. I was about, I don't know how many, maybe 18, 19, 20 years old. A little nervous because I never confronted a program director with a demand. I said, "Look, I think I got what I want for my life. I want to be called Cousin Brucie." He looked me in the eye and he said, "Are you out of your mind? Are you crazy? Do you think this is Waikiki? Do you think this is Morgantown, West Virginia? Kid, this is the Big Apple, this is New York City. That's the corniest thing I ever heard." Well, I upped, and I looked at him in the eye, and I said, and I know I got the energy or the nerve. I said, "Sir, there's nothing better than somebody being corny. When you go, you love your cousins, and you go to their house to play with their toys. That's corny? Then we're all corny." He said, "All right, kid, you convinced me. Try it tonight, but don't overdo it. because if you overdo it, I'm going to fire you first thing in the morning. Now, Scott, you never tell a kid from Brooklyn, New York, not to overdo something, because when you're stubborn, you're stubborn. I went on the air that night. I don't think I took a breath, not one breath, without saying cousin. He called me the next morning at 6 o'clock, and he told me to get my butt into the office now. And I got so scared. I didn't know. I was never yelled at. I thought it was a hit me, smack me or something. And I called my dad, who was not in the business, and I said, Dad, he was a businessman, can you come down with me? I think I'm going to be fired. I was really scared. So my dad and I went down. It was now about 7 o'clock, 7:30. And Mr. Leeds, his name was, the program director, said, you know what? You're fired. And I said, he said to me, I warned you not to overdo it. And then he pulls out from his desk these yellow pieces of paper. Before your time, Scott, they were called Western Union telegrams. Mm. These were the precursor to email and tweets, you know? He pulled them out, threw them on the desk, and said, look what he did. So my father, being a very astute man, very you know, streetwise, said, well, Mr. Leeds, what, that seems to me, if you got a response like that, this man, Cousin Brucey, I want to hire him, not fire him. So he looked up at me and my father, and he says, that's what we're doing. We're putting him under a 7-year contract. Mm. And that's how the Cousin Brucey thing started, by accident, by fate.
Oh, what a great story that is.
And it's really, it's almost literally verbatim. It really is, it's as it happened.
As it happened. And, you know, it's interesting because it has certainly served you well.
Yep, it sure does. My wife calls me Sir Cousin.
You ended up, I would say, the first big gig, WABC. How did you end up at Powerhouse WABC back in the early days?
Well, I was down, one of my second jobs, second or third jobs, I forgot now, was down in Miami. I was at WIMZ radio station, WIMZ in Miami, which was a real 50,000-watt powerhouse down there, and it was an AM station, and I was doing pretty well. After I left WINS, I went down there, and I stayed there about a year and a half, and one day, around Christmas time, I see under a palm tree a man dressed as Santa Claus with a beard wearing Bermuda shorts. And I said, that's it, I'm out of here. You know, which is kind of funny because biblically, that's probably more accurate than what we perceive, you know, with everything happening in the North Pole or something. I left Miami and I got the job. I got the job. My career really started. So I started moving around a little bit. So Miami was just before New York City. Mm. And then I stayed in New York City for the rest of my career.
You did stay in New York City, went around to a few stations there, WABC, WNBC, and,
right.
And WCBS.
CBS-FM, right.
Absolutely. When you were at WABC and you really hit a stride there, why was it in 1974 you ended up at WNBC?
Well, things changed. Things changed a little bit. They had a management change. And management came in, and I don't know, he thought, he said to me, you're getting too old for this. You don't let this younger people, it was a silly mess. Things changed, the format changed, they went to all news. You know, things like that happen in radio. But I was at the WABC for 13 years, so the die was cast, so to speak. And nobody could stop this steam engine that I had going. So it was time to change. And I went to I think it was NBC after that. And that was not a long gig. I think it was a couple of years. And once again, they had a management change, and they changed the personnel. And then I went to CBS, really was where I really found myself. So ABC and CBS was really the main things of my recipe. And CBS, I was with them for CBS-FM for 20 years, Scott. 20 years. And it was a wonderful stay. I had a great time, and that's where really Cousin Brucey came into his own.
Absolutely. I think all would agree. Now, interestingly enough, though, during this period, you alluded to it earlier on, you became a station owner, owned some stations. Why did you want to get in on that end of the business?
Well, you know what? You were doing this all your life. You have people coming over to you making offers all the time. Why don't you come in and buy a station with me, or let me give you a piece of this, and we'd love to have you in. Because as your name develops, you know, people believe you're an expert. You know, it's like the movie The Wizard of Oz. So somebody gives you a diploma or a hat to wear, and you're thought to be an expert. You know, what is an expert? An expert to me is somebody who loves what they're doing and knows a little bit, right? I am an expert today. I love what I'm doing. And things started changing a little bit in the business, and I met a fellow named Bob Sullivan. And Bob and I hit it off great, and Bob was a very, very bright, brilliant businessman. And it was time for me to get my own checkers on the board. And we bought one radio station together, and then we bought another one. And by the time we were over, we had about, I think 80 of them, plus a very big television station down south. So we really started building a wonderful corporation, and I loved it. But very honestly, I missed being on the microphone. I never liked being Cousin Brucey management. I like advising management, but I just didn't like it. These poor guys, I'll tell you, here's a funny thing that you'll appreciate. You know, running my stations, we were all over. We started getting radio stations all over the Northeast and some South stations, and we'd have our own airplane, and every day we'd fly to two or three of these different radio stations, and I'd go on the air because people wanted me on the air. Bob would go out and sell, and I would go on the local radio stations. And I enjoyed it very much, but I was getting tired. And it was time to go back. And then CBS-FM came over and offered me a gig. They wanted me on every Saturday. But I couldn't do that because, you know, I had my obligations. We had a lot of radio stations to run and very, very major responsibility. So I went on once a month because I really missed my microphone in New York City. And then the rest, of course, became history. And I went on from one time a month, I went on to every week because I really loved it. Then eventually the 80s hit and everything hit the fan. And we sold our radio stations and television stations. And I must say we did very, very well. That's why you see me smiling all the time. Because, you know, I'm a very lucky man. I'm doing what I want to do. And it's wonderful. Not because I have to do it, because I want to do it. And that is a very major part of somebody's growing up a little bit. And then I went out to CBS-FM full-time.
Well, it's interesting.
Then things started happening. Then Sirius-XM came along. I was on CBS-FM for 20 years. And I really had a great time. They left me to my own. I did what I wanted. I made up my own rules. But, you know, they know I'm still a very responsible broadcaster. I mean, I take pride in that, Scott. And they know that they can trust me. I didn't have to be told by a program director what to do and what not to do because I did it. And that's the way it is today. On my shows today on SiriusXM, I'm given complete freedom.
Well, you know, it's kind of interesting because you mentioned back in 74 when you left WABC that they thought, oh, you're getting too old to do this, and certainly that wasn't the case. And
that was baloney. That was a stupidity of these management people that came in. That was a lot of nonsense.
Absolutely, because you had this great 20-year run at WCBS, and it was a great run, and people remember that run. And I remember in 2005 when that came to an end, that was big news. That was news everywhere. Was it a shock to you that that happened?
Oh, yeah. You want to hear that? I'll tell you how much of a shock you'd like to hear it. We were, that morning, we were at the, where was that, over on 42nd Street, the big... the big club over there that does rock and roll. What the heck's the name of it? BB Kings. We were doing a live broadcast celebrating Mickey Dolan's 100th broadcast. And Mickey and I are pretty friendly, and I was invited to come down and do the broadcast with him. So we were on the air, and everything's great, and we had a lot of our management people there, and hundreds of people from the audience were on the air live. And while we were on the air, unbeknownst to us, they were destroying all the computer files, ripping down the old CBS-FM banners, and they decided to change the format. A couple of the management jerks who had absolutely no radio knowledge whatsoever, and I say that to this day, we didn't know what the heck they were doing, decided to change format for one big reason. It's called G-R-E-E-D, greed. Mm. Greed. They wanted to save money, so they let everybody go. And they put on this format called Jack, and which lasted a year too long, more than it should have lasted. It was a terrible format that came out of Vancouver. And it did all right in a couple little markets. But New York City, New York City is a very special market. It's very personal. It's live, and people get to know you. You become Cousin Brucey is part of people's family, as you know, Scott. And to this day, I am. But now it's on a national/international basis. So we were let go, and I was told on a day, I didn't know. We went off the air. I went home, and then the management came over to me. The management came over to me on the phone and said, Bruce, you don't have to come in tonight. We've changed the format. That's how I found out about it. That's how cold, after 20 years, and very, very, very successful, as anybody can see historically. I mean, it's statistics. And we did very well financially and rating-wise. And they just said coldly like that, you don't have to come in, but we want to talk to you. And that was it. Well, that freaked me out. That day, by 5 o'clock, the news hit the street. Ready for this? I live down in Greenwich Village in New York City. My wife was out. All right? She was out shopping. And in front of our house, the news was so big and had such a great effect on the populace of New York City that television trucks, you know, with the microwaves, with the things, antennas on top and cables, well, there must have been a dozen of them in front of my door. It looked like somebody was assassinated. So my wife comes home, and these cables are going into our house. We have our own entrance on the street level. And she sees all these cables and television people running in and out, and she thought maybe that I was assassinated or killed. Thought something happened to me.
It was
terrible.
Oh, I
she ran in, and you know, and then she sees me being interviewed, and of course I told her what happened. But that's how that happened. It was like a sneak attack. Stupid.
Yeah, it was an interesting time in radio, that's to say
yes.
The least. And then, how did it come that you would end up on Sirius Satellite Radio? Because at that time, 2005 versus 2016, we know what that is now, but it was a little different back then. And from a man who'd spent his life on broadcast radio, were you trepidatious? What was the feeling back then?
Well, I went on television. I was on a lot of television because, as I said, this radio station was part of the blood and the respiratory system of this great city of New York and New Jersey, Connecticut. We reached, you know, reached a lot of people. And it had such an effect sociologically that television and newspapers and all the media were very fascinated with, like you are, with what happened there historically. So I was on live television constantly being interviewed. And on one station, I was on NBC, the Today Show, I think it was. It was a Saturday, if I'm not mistaken. And I went on this Today Saturday Show. And by the time that was over, I was offered three jobs. By the time Monday came around, I had seven jobs that were offered to me. So I started going on interviews. Now, this was day three or four. During that time, Sirius Radio and XM Radio, which were two different entities, both called me that they wanted to see me. And they both said to me, before you make any decision, please talk to us. And then, you know, I interviewed and I talked to people, and I was offered some really very nice jobs here in New York City. I was even offered a job at a tiny station out in New Jersey, which I thought was so nice, so sweet, and I never forgot that. They got me up there, and Mel Karmazin, bless his heart, said to me, Bruce, this will be your last contract. You will never have to go anywhere again as long as you want to be on the radio. And that's how I settled. And then eventually, then XM offered me the same thing. They were in Washington at that time. Broadcast radio did not offer me financially and made it enticing like satellite radio did at that time. And also, I was fascinated with this new medium called satellite radio, the idea of reaching almost the entire hemisphere, let alone the nation. So the deal was great, the pot was sweetened beautifully, and I said yes. And then here I am today still doing it.
And that might be an interesting question for people. For a gentleman who has made good enough money to, if you want to go lay on a beach somewhere, you can. Not that you should stop doing it, because we wouldn't like that, but why do you still do it?
And there's something inside of me that says, I can continue. I know I'm, this satellite thing, this medium that I'm on, I love the idea that I'm reaching people in every single city, hamlet, and dorf all over this country, in Canada and down south. I get calls from Denmark and Italy. You know, they hear it on the internet. But reaching people who really never heard of Cousin Brucey and me capturing their hearts, makes me feel good, which shows me that I still there's still something in me that wants to get out there and reach people and make them happy. Because if my audience is happy, I'm happy. So I continue, and like I always say on the air, I'll do this, and people ask me that all the time, Scott. You know, why don't you retire? What's going on? What, you know, you've had enough. Lie on the beach. You know, you've done it. And I say, no, I haven't. I as long as the audience is there and this music wants to survive, and it does, I have to do it. It's like a calling. It's almost like a crusade. And I, Scott, when that light goes on the air and says, on air, Brucey, you're on the radio, I feel the people out there. I feel the pressure. I feel the pulse. So I have to continue.
And because you have continued, you had a great, great 40th birthday party late last year on the radio.
Oh, wasn't that amazing?
Oh, talk a little bit about that.
Well, you know, shows you what a cornball I am, but it's really not corny. And with all the years that I've been doing this, you'd think that nothing would faze me. Now, I cannot figure to this day how my staff, my producers, and they were young kids, their early 30s, they pulled the wool over my eyes. I had no idea that they were lining up almost every major performer in my genre, you know, 50s, 60s, and 70s, to come on the air to salute me and throw kisses to me. And it just not. And then the audience, of course, which to me is the most important part of my machinery here, my cogs and wheels, my audience, all pulled together and made me a birthday that I will never forget as long as I live. But it was absolutely, Scott, a complete, honest surprise. And, you know, what is better than a surprise party?
Oh, nothing. And when I heard bits and pieces of that, I mean, Chubby Checker and just the great names that were a part of that.
Yeah, every name, which was really great. And people I haven't talked to in a while. But, most of the people I keep in contact with, they're appreciative of whatever Cousin Brucey did. You know, most of them were very young at this time, as I was, and still am, by the way. I want to stress that to this audience of yours. It was so nice talking to them, and they showed their appreciation. You know, people like Tony Orlando, and I mean, gosh, like you said, Bobby Rydell, and on and Chubby, and on and on and on. And it was 4 hours of a love fest. I mean, and by the way, it was repeated again about 3 weeks ago, because I was off the air for a month, Scott. I don't know if you know that, but I just had knee reconstruction surgery. So, it's been a painful process, and I couldn't go on the air, and I took off a month. So they replayed that party show because they had so many requests for me to replay it. And I heard part of it, and I'm still amazed. It just knocks the breath out of you. It's really nice that, you know, people show their love and appreciation like that. Radio is an amazing, amazing medium, as you know. I mean, I don't think there's anything like radio. I love television. I like to do television. I love being interviewed. It's fun. I wrote books, you know. But there's nothing like sitting on that microphone, and when those wires go out and that transmitter goes on, you are connecting with people's flesh and blood. It's wonderful.
Theater of the mind.
Yep, exactly.
It's absolutely great. Is there any difference between Cousin Brucey and Bruce Morrow?
You know, it's very close. That's kind of funny. I'd rather my wife answer that question. She probably could. I think they're pretty close. I think Brucey has, you know, some very serious moments. I lose my temper. I get short-tempered once in a while. But overall, I'd say 83.6% of what you hear on the air is really me. Like, I'm talking to you right now, that's Bruce Morrow, right, talking about Cousin Brucey. But Cousin Brucey is a real alternative to me. It's real. It's not a phony. I love life. I love this audience. I love my music. And I love what I do to this day.
And we all love hearing you do it. What is something, though, because you are so public and you have become part of the lexicon of our lives, what is something we don't know about you? What is something that maybe I'm not going to say shocked, but something that would say, oh, I wouldn't imagine that.
Well, let's see. What can I tell you? I love listening to classical music. That always knocks people out a little bit. Not the exotic stuff. But, you know, the popular stuff, I Always love my musical appreciation classes. I enjoy talking to people. That shouldn't shock anybody. My hobby, my real love in life is photography. If I had druthers, I would probably take my cameras and Jody and I would travel for the rest of our lives and I'd become a photojournalist. That's my real love. And, you know, once again, it's really, if you look at it, it's a lie because it's part of the creative process and my eye is like a camera. I just like my ear and my mouth is like microphones and then radios. I love to go out, I love to photograph, but it really is an extension of my personality. But you know, shocking people, I don't really think so. I don't think there's anything shocking. I'm very enthusiastic. I have tremendous energy. Like, I get people email me from, say, South Dakota or North Dakota listening, and they might have lived in New York at one time, and now they're in the boons and the hills of North Dakota, and I get somebody saying, "You're still alive?" I get that a lot, which is kind of fun. My enthusiasm, my boiler inside of me is real. And it's not put on, it's not on radio, as I call it, right? It's a thing that I get, and it's effective, and it works, and it's very natural. So there's not much. I love cars, you know, I'm just trying to think. Photography, I love cars, I love traveling, and I love my wife, Jody. Yep. And Jody and I, my best friend, and we just have a wonderful life together. And because of the personality that you know, Cousin Brucey, it's afforded me the opportunity to enjoy my life and to go on living it. But I'd say the guy that you know is the guy that is.
That's good to hear. With about 6 minutes left, there's a lot of bases I want to cover here, so we'll kind of try to run through these real quick. You got the opportunity, and we're all so jealous, to interview the Beatles. What was it like?
And that was fun. Well, you know, that was almost a natural progression, because that started way back probably in 61, 62. So by the time they really came out and I got very personally involved with them, it was like part of our everyday lives. The Beatles, when we first started getting records in early 62, I remember having music meetings, and during the music meetings, most of the guys would turn them down because they didn't like the sound, they didn't like the idea of these upstarts from Great Britain imitating the Everly Brothers and Jerry Lee Lewis and Chuck Berry. They didn't hear it. With a couple of my colleagues like Ron Lundy and Harry Harrison and people like that, I heard it. We knew that there was something different. And also, I realized at the time that our musical genre was really getting to be tired, and we needed something new. You know, in the United States, we have a belief, a corporate belief, which is wrong. If it ain't broke, don't fix it, you know, which means, you know, leave things alone if they're okay. But it was pretty obvious that musically we were getting very boring and tired. So here come these four mop tops and a couple other groups from the mother country, from England. And they're making all kinds of noise and taking the American music idiom of rock and roll and adding a new energy, a new spirit to it. And that's how it really happened. And then once, little by little, I was starting getting records, and we played it, and we convinced everybody at the station that we should play this music, and we did, and the audience grabbed it crazy. It was a wonderful time. And Scott, if we ever talk about this, we need more than 6 minutes, because I'll tell you stories about the early days of the Beatles and the audience that'll knock your socks off.
Oh, it was really
a wonderful, wonderful, inventive time.
We're going to have you back. I'm going to try to get in four questions here really quick, and boy, this is going to be interesting, but greatest moment of your career?
I'd say introducing the Beatles. Well, there's two things that come right to mind as you ask that question. Introducing the Beatles at Chase Stadium, great time of my life, which I'd like to describe very, very vividly, but I want time to do that. So you write that down for next time, but that's one answer. The other answer, I think, were my days at Palisades Park, emceeing and producing those shows, because that's really where I came out, and I helped the music get developed. Those days at Palisades Park, sun-filled days in front of thousands of young kids whose parents entrusted me with. I was like I'm the big electronic radio babysitter. And we presented all these acts on the stage, all lip-syncing, Scott, lip-syncing their records. Mm. That's the other great moment of my career.
Worst moment.
So what, you know, so what we're going to do next time, we'll elaborate on those two things.
What was the worst moment of your career?
The worst moment of my career? Probably when I was told that that CBS FM was going off the air with formats, and they made a terrible, disgraceful business and creative error. That was probably the worst time of my career. It was it broke my heart. It broke the audience's heart, and it really was a cultural, besides business mistake.
This is a question I ask a lot of people. Why is it that older actors and actresses, even though they might not be working as much, are still interviewed on programs? People want to hear about them. They still come out. I was thinking the other day, Fats Domino is still alive. Bobby Lewis is still alive. Jerry Lee Lewis is still alive. But you don't see them anywhere. Why is that?
Well, first of all, they're getting older. Now, Fats is not well. Bobby Lewis, God bless him. I just had him at our Palisades Park reunion a couple of years ago. He's not well. He's blind. He's sightless. And Jerry Lee Lewis, you know, slowed down. You know, they're getting old. What it is? It's called age. And you know, my wife Jody has a great line. I always love to use it. Getting old is not for sissies.
Mm.
And it's really a matter of aging. And all I interview almost everybody on the air. And, you know, a lot of them, most of them have slowed down. And we're losing a lot of these great icons. And I love the idea that I am archiving almost all of these people that we love. But the reason, Scott, I think the other part of your question is we still hear them. Why? Because they're so much part of our DNA, our genetic makeup. They're part of our cultural and social background. You know, and once you fall in love with somebody, it never dies. Beethoven, Mozart, Mussorgsky, Chopin, right? You know, they're still very alive today because what they've created, their art, what they've created has given our body, our DNA, a tremendous jolt of electricity. So they'll always be here.
Was listening this morning to Bobby Lewis, Tossin' and Turnin', and boy, does that get you going. What a great song
that
was.
I couldn't sleep at all last night. Oh, yeah.
Oh, great song.
He's a wonderful, wonderful guy. Great performer. He lost his eyesight, but he gets on the stage, right? Gets on that microphone, and there's Bobby Lewis, the same as he was 15, 20 years ago.
As well as it should be. Cousin Brucey, 100 years from now, when people look back at you and your time, how would you like them to remember you?
Somebody who loved what he was doing, that really loved and cared about the audience, and was a radio man.
There is no doubt about that. You are a radio man, and there's no doubt about the fact that we need to have you back on because we've got to learn so much more about all these things and that Beatles story from Shea Stadium without question. Cousin Brucey, you are a delight, and I hope you do come back with us, and I hope so. This is
fun. Let me ask him, do you ever have people, the audience, on the air with you?
Oh, we do, sure.
All right, maybe next time. Why don't we open the phone? I love to talk to the audience, and it always fascinates me the things they ask. I really do. So maybe next time we can do a little of that.
I would love to do it. Cousin Brucey, keep on keeping on, and we'll talk soon.
Scott, a pleasure. I'm glad we finally got to do this. And to the audience out there, Happy New Year.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Cousin Brucey, one of the all-time greats. And see, we were so busy covering that, I didn't even get to cover David Bowie's passing today. But you couldn't get to it. It was just
right.
So important. But we're going to talk about that in hour number two. And maybe we'll hear a little Tossin' and Turnin' with Bobby Lewis. What a great song that is. Stay tuned to WWGH Radio.
$1 million lawsuit. I think that's what's been reported. Who knows if that's correct or not. But if they said, John, we made a mistake just like you said. Come on back. You drop the lawsuit.
You know, we'd have to consider.